KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Oakland.
Hello from South Berkeley, below Ashby.
I live in North Richmond.
Kentfield.
Oh, I live in San Jose, near Campbell.
Bayview.
Coming up, the Oakland A's are unexpectedly one of the hottest teams in baseball. We'll talk about why.
Where the A's are really, really good is in their bullpen.
We'll revisit their storied history, including their unique style.
So we have a bobblehead and a magazine cover to represent Eckersley, so you really get to understand the texture of his hair and mustache.
And we'll check out an old-time ball game with wool uniforms, tiny gloves, and good sportsmanship.
It's a wonderful thing. It's baseball without jerks.
Batter up. Cross Currents is on deck. The Oakland A's are the hottest team in baseball.
Olson drives one. Left center field. Hit pretty well. And that baby is gone. That's a two-run shot, folks. And now it's a 6-0 A's lead.
That's first baseman Matt Olson piling on in yesterday's shutout victory over the Detroit Tigers. This is the first time the team's been really good in a while, which makes it pretty good timing for the Oakland Museum of California to have an exhibit about the A's history. The A's have won 4 World Series titles during their 50 years in Oakland. The museum is taking a closer look at the last one in its exhibit celebrating the 50th anniversary of the baseball franchise in the town. KALW's Marco Seiler Gonzalez has the story.
And he gets a high fly ball to left field, and that one is carrying, and back goes Mitchell, and it's a launching pad again tonight.
That was Ricky Henderson's leadoff home run in the fourth game of the 1989 Battle of the Bay World Series clash against the San Francisco Giants.
But on a winless night, what would be a normal routine fly ball goes out, just like last night.
Henderson was a big star, and he was one of 3 players on the A's roster who had a connection to Oakland. That's why one of the newest installments at the Oakland Museum of California is called Homegrown Heroes. It celebrates the 50th anniversary of the A's franchise moving to Oakland.
We decided to focus on one of the most exciting moments in the history of, you know, them here in the city, which was the 89 World Series.
Erendina Delgadillo is an associate curator at the Oakland Museum. She was in charge of designing the A's mini exhibit. The walls are plastered with A's artifacts and memorabilia from the 89 World Series. It features 3 players who grew up right here. Dave Stewart, Ricky Henderson, and Dennis Eckersley.
Barely, by inches, just misses a home run.
Delgadillo says they chose to feature the 89 series because it was a ground-shaking event in the Bay Area. Literally. Here's Al Michaels with the live call on ABC.
Second base, so the Oakland A's take.
I'll tell you what, we're having an earthquake.
The Loma Prieta earthquake struck San Francisco just before the start of Game 3.
A lot of people attribute the relatively low casualty rate to the fact that this game was happening. It hit right around 5 o'clock, so it was rush hour, and there would have been many more people on the streets if it weren't for people who attended the actual game or people who stayed home to watch.
The game was postponed. The players were just as shaken up as the fans. On his way home from the stadium, A's pitcher Dave Stewart drove by a collapsed freeway overpass. He talked about it in an interview with KTVU.
I pull over. And I take a look at the cypress structure. I'm still in my uniform bottoms. And I sit there for about an hour. Then I get in my car and I get on San Pablo and I finish my journey home. I get up at 1 o'clock in the morning and I go back to that structure. And just start doing whatever I can to help the people that are working there.
The series started up again 10 days later. The A's took games 3 and 4 with ease, thanks in part to Ricky Henderson's fast feet.
Henderson, meanwhile, drills one to the gap in right center field, and the only question is double or triple. Well, there's 2, and he's on his way to 3rd, and it's 3.
Just over a dozen years earlier, Henderson was a star athlete at Oakland Tech High School. Delgadillo shows me a set of blown-up images of his and the other players' high school yearbook photos.
The funny thing is, both Eckersley's name and Ricky Henderson's name are misspelled in their yearbooks.
The exhibit has a small monitor that shows a highlight montage of Game 4 at Candlestick Park. The A's are up 3 runs in the bottom of the ninth inning with their all-star closer on the mound.
So Dennis Eckersley comes into pitch. He has a 3-run lead.
Delgadillo says Eckersley's shaggy hair and broad mustache were just as distinctive as his high-legged windup.
So we have a bobblehead and a magazine cover to represent Eckersley, so you really get to understand the texture of his hair and mustache.
Eckersley went to Washington High School in Fremont. His high school yearbook photo might be his only public image without his famous mustache.
So the A's continue to do it in every phase. Power, hitting, running, defense, pitching, of course. Fly ball to left field, Henderson makes the catch, and the Giants are now down to their final out.
Eckersley actually grew up rooting for both the Giants and the A's, but in the bottom of the ninth inning of Game 4 of the 1989 World Series, he only cared about one team winning.
A's trying to sweep, but the Giants have certainly not made life easy for them tonight. It's a ground ball to the right side, speared by Phillips, flips to Eckersley, yes! He's there in time, and the A's are the world champions.
That turned out to be the A's' last appearance in the World Series. As a historian, Delgadillo says the main purpose of these mini-exhibits is to examine chapters that can shed light on contemporary conversations.
We try to keep it very topical. And remind people that what happened in the past is happening now. It looks different, but those cycles wax and wane. And if we're using history to its fullest, we're paying attention to that and trying to understand the subtleties and the relationship between what happened then and what's happening now, in the interest of providing ourselves more tools to change our current moment.
It's a provocative thought. With the Warriors and Raiders set to leave Oakland in the next couple years, the A's will be the last big league team left in town. And with 50 years behind them, their roots run deep. In Oakland, I'm Marco Salar Gonzalez for Cross Currents.
You can see the Homegrown Heroes exhibit for yourself at the Oakland Museum of California until October 21st. That's just before the next World Series begins. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. As we just heard, the Oakland A's last won the World Series almost 30 years ago. Generally, since then, there hasn't been all that much to cheer about. They're a low-budget ball club in a deep-pocketed league. Every time a player starts to get good, he gets shipped out because they won't be able to afford him. It's enough to make a fan not want to go to a game. But hey, guess what? All of a sudden, they're hella good. In fact, if the season ended now, they would be in the playoffs. So what is going on? KELW's Ben Trefney joins me in studio. And besides being our news director, Ben, you are also our resident sports junkie.
It's true. And we're about to start up our softball season, Hannah. Go Mashers.
Go Mashers. So how come the A's are so good this year?
Magic.
No.
It's kind of hard to say, honestly. They're just a really good team, but they weren't at the beginning of the season. They were just mediocre the first couple of months, mm-hmm. win some, lose some. And then around the middle of June, they were a couple games under 500. And since then, they've been the hottest team in baseball. So let's break it down. Mm-hmm. First, there's this guy.
40 again. That one is drilled. Right center field. And it is gone. 31.
That is designated hitter Chris Davis smacking his 31st homer of the season on Sunday. He's the big hitter, super hot right now, and he has the third most homers in baseball this year. Mm. And the A's as a team, they got the third most homers in baseball this year. Mm-hmm. So there's that. Then there's defense.
This one's popped up. Chapman, you feel like he can catch everything, and he did.
Unbelievable. That's third baseman Matt Chapman. Most analysts think he's the best defensive third baseman in the game, and he might be the best defensive player in all of baseball. And Hannah, this is only his second year. So there's him. Mm-hmm. And every good baseball team has to have good pitching, and the A's have that too.
Okay.
2-0 pitch. Grounded to short. Scooped up by Simeon. It's a no-hitter. It's a no-hitter. Sean Manaea has no-hit the hottest team in baseball. An absolutely sensational performance.
That's Sean Manaea, no-hitting the Boston Red Sox back in April. He's one of many young guns on the pitching staff who are pretty good. But where the A's are really, really good is in their bullpen.
What's a bullpen?
It's the place where the pitchers who come in after the first pitcher hang out.
Okay, uh-huh.
So they've got a really good bullpen. Let's hear something about them.
Go to pitch. Strike. Three call. Luke Kroy tags him. And that, folks, is the ball game. So another pitcher's duel and another win for the Athletics. Trinan gets his 28th save. And the A's are 20 games over 500.
That's Blake Trinan, and he is off the charts good. He's given up less than a run every nine innings pitched, like a full game, and that's better than any closer in baseball. All the A's relievers are good, Hannah, and that means when they're ahead at the ends of games, they win.
Okay.
In fact, they've got the best winning percentage in one-run games in all of baseball.
Okay, so I get why they're good. When was the last time they played well?
Yeah, it's been a little while, Hannah. They've not won a World Series since 1989, though they have had some success since then. Mm-hmm. Hey, Gabe, can you play a little tune to get us rolling here? Let's go back to the legendary season of 2002 when they won a league record 20 straight games. That was when A's general manager Billy Beane famously figured out players' worth using sabermetrics. That's basically just crunching numbers. But Michael Lewis wrote a book about the A's. Right. Then a movie got made.
Moneyball.
Then Brad Pitt's hanging out in Oakland.
Yes.
And then the A's did not win the World Series.
Oh.
In 2012, the A's had the lowest payroll in baseball. No surprise there. Mm-hmm. And they're 5 games back at Texas with just 9 games to go, and they went ahead and won the division. But then they lost to the Detroit Tigers, and then, well, the San Francisco Giants won the World Series, which I don't think A's fans are very happy about. Mm. And Hannah, just 4 years ago, in 2014, the A's were the best team in baseball right about this time of year. And then they traded their heart and soul slugger, Yoenis Cespedes, for John Lester, and that did not really work out. The team kind of fell apart, they eked into the playoffs, they lost the wild card game, yeah. And the Giants won the World Series again.
Again. Okay, so now that the A's are good again, does it mean they're going to stick around?
Yeah, I don't know. There's actually a bunch of reasons that they might go. Mm. They don't really get enough people out to the Coliseum to watch games. As of today, they're only drawing about 18,000 fans per home game. That's fourth worst in the majors. You jump across the bay, and the Giants, who aren't nearly as good as the A's this year, they're drawing almost 39,000 people per game. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the Giants charge an extra $14 per fan per game. So let's do some more math. Baseball's a game for stat geeks, as you might know. It's more than 20,000 people per game that the Giants draw. That's times 81 games a year, and say that you can make $40 per game per person on that. That's a lot of money. That totals up to about $64 million a year. That's if you draw more fans.
Such a huge number.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, Hannah, it might not even matter if the A's drew a bunch more fans.
Why?
Because where they play at the Coliseum, this is a cavernous stadium. It's made for football and baseball, and it's kind of old. And the Raiders, they're headed to a new stadium in Las Vegas. That's going to leave the A's as the only major league game in town, and the ownership group has been trying to get a new baseball stadium or get out of town to get a new baseball stadium for a while. Mm-hmm. Every major sports owner wants a new stadium because new stadiums have luxury boxes and high-end amenities for rich people. The Vegas Raiders, they're going to charge more it's tough to even say that, but the Vegas Raiders are charging more than any other team for seat licenses. The seat licenses are the rights for fans to buy season tickets. Mm-hmm. The Warriors are moving into the Chase Center here in San Francisco, and that's going to price out all kinds of fans. They already charge more than pretty much any team.
Right.
And the 49ers, they moved into Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara a couple years ago, and even though it's hot and trafficky, it makes money on the elite audience.
Yeah.
Yeah, pro sports is not just for fun, despite the hype, despite the appearances. It's for money.
That's what it sounds like.
Yep, and the owners do what makes money. Just ask these faithful Golden State Warriors fans who are being left behind as their team moves into a high-rent district.
I mean, there seems to be no loyalty to these fans.
Yeah, it does not look like that, really. I think that's the way that the A's fans feel.
Okay, so what does it look like will happen to the A's?
Well, if they keep playing well, maybe they'll get the playoffs. Maybe they'll win another World Series. Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll make some more money. Maybe they'll keep some of their players. Maybe they'll get a new stadium. The fans want that. Mayor Libby Schaff wants that.
Right.
But if history tells the story of the future, Hannah, the A's will keep lowballing. The fans may or may not show up, and the team generally won't be very competitive.
Except this year.
Except this year, because they're magic.
Magic. Okay, thanks, Ben.
Thank you, Hannah.
Ben Trefney is KLW's news director and manager of the McLaren Park Mashers softball team. Go Mashers.
Go Mashers.
The Mac men were dominant when derby hats were prominent. Legends filled athletic uniforms. Home Run Baker and the Chief. Double X brought pitchers grief. They broke up the A's and then the darkest days were born. I'm talking baseball. Simmons, Grove, and Dykes. A's baseball. Pete Suter and Black Mike. Ferris, Fain, and Chance both had their day. Then a stop in Kansas City along the way. I'm talking baseball. Baseball and the A's.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba.
You know, what's it been like 8 years ago? I just driving by, I'm seeing them out here, and I'm like, what the heck is going on out here? They look funny. They got no gloves. Everyone's yelling, hooting, hollering, and it just looked like a lot of fun. I've always wanted to play baseball.
That was Takashi Holmes, who had stumbled upon a game of Bay Area vintage baseball. The league is devoted to playing by 19th century rules with uniforms and equipment from that era. Players actually do use mitts, but they're practically hand-sized, and there's no padding in the palm and no webbing between the thumb and the index finger. The wooden bats the hitters swing are much heavier than today's models. Reporter Christy Cole took some newfangled audio equipment out to a recent contest to see how the 19th century game was played.
It's a gorgeous sunny Sunday afternoon at Big Rec Field in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park. A small crowd is watching as the San Francisco Pelicans play the Barbary Coasters. It's the bottom of the third inning. The Pelicans just got a hit, putting a man on first base.
Ball.
From afar, this looks like most baseball games, but it's really not. The players' uniforms come from a different era. They wear pants that stop at the knees, knee-high socks with stripes, and short-billed caps without any logos.
Hold.
This is a game of the Bay Area Vintage Baseball League. There are more than 200 vintage teams across the country, from the Menominee Blue Caps in Wisconsin to the Allegheny Ironsides in Pennsylvania. The teams in the Bay Area League use rules from 1886, and they are different from today's game. For instance, the person you and I might call the pitcher is referred to in this game as the hurler. The Coasters hurler takes a small windup and throws. Hurlers can't take the full windup that modern pitchers do. They're allowed 7 balls before being charged with a walk, but they can't intentionally walk a batter. It still takes 3 strikes to get a batter out, but outs are called hands in this league. Whatever you call them, you still need 3 to retire the side. The Coasters get the third hand. Still, they're down 13-4 to the Pelicans, but Coasters infielder Wesley Goodman Levy is not too bummed out by that. He's cheering for his fellow Coasters to rally.
Yeah, Peaches!
Peaches happens to be one of Goodman Levy's teammates. Nicknames are the norm in the vintage league. Everybody's going to get one sooner or later. Wesley Goodman Levy's is Dread Pirate, a nickname given him by his teammates for the character named Wesley in The Princess Bride. Dread Pirate says you really can't tell who the players are, even with a scorecard. The collared button-down jerseys don't have numbers or names on them. Nicknames are how players come to know one another.
For the first 2 months of playing with these guys, I really didn't know anyone's real name. It was just Juice and Butcher and Peterson and Reverend. It was pretty hilarious, like, trying to discern everyone's real name.
It's the start of the 7th and final inning. The Pelicans are ahead by 9 runs, and the Coasters have their last at bat. And by the way, if that score seems a little high for a baseball game, consider that players use a mitt that looks more like a gardening glove. If you play baseball, or at least a game of catch, think for a moment how much you rely on the longer fingers and the webbing of your mitt to catch a ball. The Coasters' Matthew Milkman Peterson says players in the vintage league don't have that advantage.
The old-timey equipment is a bit of an equalizer. So people that have a lot more experience and normally would be making great plays if they had modern equipment are equally handicapped by the tiny glove.
That means plays such as a fly ball to the outfield are not automatic outs. The Coasters fail to score in the top of the seventh, ending the game. The teams gather at their respective dugouts to talk and enjoy the sunshine. Meanwhile, players in the next contest between the San Francisco Sea Lions and the San Francisco Eagles start to warm up under the watchful eye of umpire Carl Gibbs.
I'm simply referred to as the sir.
Gibbs says that's what the umpire was called in the 1880s.
A certain reverence they hold their umpires in, or did at least in 1886.
Gibbs stands along the first baseline and takes a sip from a tall can of ale. Players and sirs often partake during games. Gibbs notes that it's a friendly contest. In fact, players aren't allowed to challenge his calls, so there's no yelling or showing up the sir at all.
It's a gentleman's game. That's the joy of old-time baseball. It's competitive, but it's not alpha male competitive. Most of the teams, you know, have become friends for a long period of time, know each other for a long period of time. It's a wonderful thing. It's baseball without jerks.
Gibbs wears a top hat, tie, and suit that make him look a little like the Monopoly guy. Only Gibbs has a goatee and more hair. He has played the sir in league games for 7 years. He joined after someone saw him officiate a trivia night at a Scottish bar in the Tenderloin.
So I put together a simple costume, bought a derby hat and wore a black suit, and I just got caught up in it. It's great fun.
That fun is about to begin for the next game between the Eagles and the Sea Lions. As the wind kicks up, bringing in some clouds, the Eagles are up to bat in the top of the first. The team is in its first year in the league, and they have yet to win a game.
One hand.
Go, Rocky.
Where's the one?
For these guys, the vintage league is about being a part of living history. For instance, the Sea Lions took their name as a tribute to the team from the West Coast Negro League Baseball Association, which folded after one season. The Eagles go way back, too.
I've always been a baseball history nerd.
That's Tor Aagaard of the San Francisco Eagles. He's known as Wrangler.
We are a recreation of the very first organized baseball team in California. The San Francisco Eagles formed in 1859 and played their first game on February 22, President's Day of 1860.
That game was reportedly the very first baseball game played in California. The San Francisco Eagles played the Red Rovers over at 16th and Harrison in the Mission. It was quite a spectacle. Anita Day Hubbard wrote about it in the San Francisco Call Bulletin back in the day.
After 9 innings, the score was tied 33-33, and the Red Rovers accused the Eagles of unfair pitching.
Whatever pitching took place back then, it sure wasn't fooling the hitters.
Matt McCloskey, the umpire, decided the play was fair, which so incensed the Red Rovers that they refused to finish the game.
After 3 innings, the Sea Lions lead 14-0. In the Eagles' dugout, Dominic Pops Altieri rubs his left elbow.
Yeah, I got an imprint on my elbow here where it looks like railroad tracks.
Pops got a raised red lump with stitch marks where the ball hit him. The players don't wear batting helmets or much in the way of protective gear, and that makes for lots of ways to get hurt, according to Jeff Bearcat Goodwin, Brody Reverend Romsey, and Chris Bullseye McNeil.
My finger is kind of a zigzag here from a couple of bad plays in the field, but it still works.
There's a lot of jammed fingers, broken fingers, a lot of hurt feelings. No, I'm just kidding. There's not hurt feelings.
I broke a rib, I broke an ankle, dislocated my finger. That was an open dislocation. The ball seems to find a way to hit me, so I'm the bullseye. Lucky me.
Despite the damage, Bullseye, like most of the players here, sees this game as one he can keep playing well into middle age.
It's just the sound and the feel. It makes you feel like a kid again, so it's worth it. I'm 40. I got about 10 more years of this in me, so if 10, you know, so do it while I can until I break.
Hopefully not.
I'll break again, I'm positive.
Up, high, high.
Run.
Now the Eagles are down to their last at bat. The final Eagles hitter grounds out. The other Eagles meet him near first base. The Sea Lions gather at third.
Huzzah! 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 Sea Lions!
Then the teams come together at home plate for more salutes.
Huzzah, Grace!
And the old guy, 1, 2, 3.
Huzzah,
the players, along with the small group of onlookers that includes some of their children, friends, and the curious, retreat to the grassy hills of Big Rec Field to visit and pack up their gear. The results of both games, lopsided affairs, remain etched in chalk on the green wall behind home plate. The Coasters' Dread Pirate says the scores aren't what really matter.
I look up, I look at like the beauty of this field surrounded by eucalyptus and redwood and pine trees, and it's a beautiful like grass infield, and I've played enough terrible fields to know that even coming out here and losing with these guys is a fantastic afternoon.
In San Francisco, traveling between eras of baseball history, I'm Christy Cole for Cross Currents.
The Bay Area Vintage Baseball League Championship will be this Sunday, August 12th at Fallon Sports Park in Dublin. Another tournament will take place August 25th and 26th at Big Rec Field in Golden Gate Park. Find all that information at kalw.org. Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Emma McAvoy, Mira Nabulsi, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Eli Wirtschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. The content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director and resident sports junkie. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.